This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 8th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is ARC Cycles, Theory and Automaticity. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
How are you?
This is, I think, the 8th of December. The first lecture afternoon class. I want to talk to you today about ARC and finish up all this things and stuff about these cycles and get squared around with theory here so that we can take off on a breakdown of standard operating procedure. The word spreads very fast on this material. I'm getting printed notices now from clip joints and little two-bit outfits like the AMA, saying they now realize that their approaches and my approaches weren't in terrific disagreement after all. And to prove this, they're presenting standard operating procedure theta clearing issue 3. But they don't have that yet, so I don't know what they present. So what I give you in these lectures, I'm sure of, and what's manufactured by the squirrels, nobody's sure of. You know what a squirrel is? A squirrel is somebody, you know, the medical profession since time immemorial and all these various professions have had on their coattails squirrels. Every one of them. There hasn't been a single branch of human endeavor that doesn't have its lunatic fringe. We've had more than our quota, much more than our quota. And the damage that can be done by them is fortunately minimal. But occasionally they get hold of somebody and they louse them up most gloriously. It's actually a comment upon man today that an effort which is made without using any of its horsepower could actually be mauled around to the extent that Scientology and Dianetics has been mauled around. Of course, I've done some of the mauling around myself. I write under the pen name of Ira Wallace, and my hop-along Freud did a good job. Oh, but all joking aside, you as auditors are going to be beset by squirrels. You're going to look with the most aghast expression at the fact that Mrs. Pongerbung has come over and she's gotten much better. She's in pretty good condition. She ceases to pick those cockroaches off the wall all the time. And she's in pretty good shape. It's been weeks since she strangled any babies. And you're going to find her husband, who has witnessed this improvement, and Mrs. Pongerbum coming over to say, you know, we have just been talked to by an auditor who practices a subject known as squirreletics, and we've decided that probably that treatment is much better. Of course, that treatment consists probably of putting the pre-clear down the couch, putting a knee in his throat, and banging him over the head with a small mallet or something of the sort in order to secure a good solid theta clear. You will look at this just aghast, and you will say, look, no intelligent civilization could witness such a thing as this going on. Don't kid yourselves. It's not an intelligent civilization. We're trying to make one out of it. You got a long way to go. Man has been playing this beautiful tune of all is best in this best of all possible worlds, and with rape and murder and arson, and a terrific thirst of havingness all up and down the alleys and by roads, and trying to call those alleys boulevards. He's just barely out of the trees. Now, when it comes to the humanities, there have been no humanities. Don't make a confusion of that. There haven't been any. We are doing a pioneering job in that direction, which is very far from done to any great distance. But we have won this. We have won techniques which have a workability, and if adhered to, and if practiced well, can do the job, because you can make something more than Homo sapiens. In my opinion, it's about time. Okay. Those snide and bitter comments probably are completely unwarranted, but once in a while, I tell you the truth, I get bored. I wonder, why, Ronnie, I say, what the hell did you ever start this for? Well, let's go in immediately into another pair of cycles. There are two more cycles compared to the ones which we have had. The most important of those is automaticity. Automaticity ties in a little bit into what I've just been saying, because automaticity is the gradient scale of it's all being done, or it must be done for me. This is an aspect of experience, and this state of mind is something which is going to appall you in a preclear. Automaticity is something which has only vaguely been added into human experience. And yet it is right there to be added into human experience. The fellow who says, I have to do it all myself, is at an aberrated point on this scale, but he's not nearly as bad off as the people there who are below the point, it all has to be done for me. The thirst to have it done for me, that is evidently inculcated into man in earliest babyhood. He requires to be waited upon to an extent and a degree which demonstrates actually a very low level of culture. You'd be surprised how this automaticity is played upon by the modern businessman, by the manufacturer, and so on. Automaticity could be said to be the gradient scale of action stemming from oneself down to having everything done for oneself. The catatonic skits is almost the bottom of the scale. The dead man is at the very bottom of the scale. The dead man can't even embalm himself. He has to have other people do that and bury him. Now you get upscale just a little bit. You look over automaticity, and you will find it in the creation of illusion. People start creating illusions. Instead of creating the illusion, they put it on an automatic circuit. And Homo sapiens is very good at rigging up these automatic circuits so that he won't have to pay attention or think about it. And that, by the way, is the entrance point into automaticity. The person is perfectly powerful, sane, able, all-pervasive, and capable of enormous goals up to the first moment that he says, I'll rig it up so it's automatic. The first instant that he says that, he has said at the same time, I am insufficiently powerful to concentrate on more than one point at once. You see, there is no slightest doubt about this fact. A man can think in 12 different spheres of action and dictate 12 separate and not even related actions simultaneously. In the first place, there isn't any such thing as time. One of the easiest ways to do this would be to rig up a time track for, let's say we're running 12 dogs. All right, let's rig up a time track for each one of the 12 dogs and then let them play simultaneously. Rig them up in series. Let's fix up the time track. We'll say dog one is going to do this, and dog two is going to do that, and dog three is going to do that. And we go at it on that level in series, one right after the other. Now we could just take those time tracks and put them all in parallel and have them all run off simultaneously and have the dogs act on those postulates simultaneously. And they would do so. But that is dictated action. And that is a step down from the desirable state of being able simply to dictate the actions of 12 dogs simultaneously. Man has gotten to a point of concentration, or the Thetan who has come down here, and the Thetans out in the universe are actually at a point of concentration which is appalling. They think they can only do one thing at a time. Some people have got this so bad they think they can only listen and look and so on. You want to make a test out of a preclear, have him look out the window and start figuring out which one he is doing. He gets pretty groggy. You say, all right, now let's look. All right, now you're looking. Okay, now as you look, listen. Now, as you listen, feel the weight on your feet. Now, as you feel the weight on your feet, feel your heart beating, and about that time, you will see him start reeling. You've asked him to come off of some terrific point of concentration that he is fixated on by aberration. And he reacts to this by becoming unbalanced and unstable. Just in its most literal sense. I mean, he's physically becomes fails in his balance and stability. That's because you're asking him to do more than one thing at once, and he knows very, very well it's utterly impossible to do more than one thing at once. Well, of course, a fellow couldn't run a universe of his own without introducing some factor of automaticity. He starts a planet going around, and he says, this planet here and after shall go around. Here it goes. Or he builds a wood, and he said, now this wood is now inhabited by gophers and rabbits and people from Fairhope, Alabama, so that the squirrels will have something to eat. And then he just walks off more or less and leaves it with a confidence that it will continue to run. Well, that is entering into the first stages of automaticity, and only becomes bad when he starts to play this game. And this game is one that spins in very quick. He comes back the next day and he starts pretending for his own interest and enthusiasm, isn't this a nice wood? I wonder who made it. He feels that he has to do this. The second that he starts splitting up and saying to himself, I didn't do it, he's got a piece of woods for randomity. And all you have to do to produce randomity is to fail to take the responsibility for something. If you'll just refuse to take the responsibility for having done something, or just deny having done something, you're going to get randomity. And the end of that curve is lots of randomity. The end of that track, after a long time, it can get pretty low. It can get down to politicians and squirrels. That's pretty bad off. Now, Very often a fellow is persuaded that he is setting himself up as an automatic piece of machinery when he's just being himself. He's just going on a reverse on this deal. He's not self-conscious. He all of a sudden just enters into doing what he's doing, and he simply goes on doing it. And then he says, look, this is so good. This is so good. There's no time lapse there of my saying, now you do this, and now you do that, and now you do something or other. That's so good, it's so fast, it's so convincing to him that he doesn't recognize that that is action. That's action. The other is automaticity being played across two or three circuits. Here's this fellow all set up. He's got a lot of circuits. One of his circuits is to be able to drive a bus. And he goes up and down the bus route, back and forth on the bus route, back and forth on the bus route, back and forth on the bus route. He knows he's driving a bus. His circuit responses actually are minimal. You'd think they'd be terrific, but they're actually minimal. He knows he's sitting there driving a bus. It's only when one day he would say, all right, now this body's going to sit here and drive this bus automatically, and I'm not going to have to pay any more attention to it. Or he sits there driving the bus and dreaming he's someplace else and thinking about something else. There he's removed himself from the environment, and he is setting it up with automaticity in order to secure his own freedom. That's the wrong way to secure freedom. What's he doing driving a bus in the first place? Now, when you have a problem then with a preclear who is doing mock-ups, and the preclear says to you, look, I get that black spot all right, but there is a green banshee keeps wailing every time I get that, and isn't that cute? Look at there. 45 tires just rolled in the room and saluted, and aren't they cute? And it's very funny. And this building you just said to mock up, it is now waltzing. You are looking at automaticity. The fellow has a terrific desire not to be responsible for what he himself creates, and that terrific desire reflects itself in creative processing, in a randomity in the objects created. You say, mock up your body. You want to watch this, by the way, very closely and understand what this is, because it's something that you must not tolerate, but must work toward the end of actually controlling the created object. And if you've got a vast amount of automaticity going on in the created scene, work to get it out. Increase and decrease the action in that scene and change the location and setup of that scene until you're no longer confronted with this random action, this automaticity, things happening apparently without his consent. The actuality is they are happening exactly with his consent, because he consented on some other byline, some other pass, and it's arriving there at center with the scene all out of adjustment. Now you say, some fellow, mock up your body. You say, all right. You say, put it out in the street and put it back here. Again, he says, okay, fine, yes, that's right, another place, oh yes, fine. And you think he's going right on with this. You ask him what the body's doing when it gets out on the street. Oh, he says it's standing there twirling an umbrella. Now it's playing hopscotch. Yes, I have it back here now, he said. But when it got back here, it was wearing a plug hat. It has suddenly changed its overshoes, changes into mama, changes into a green elephant, and changes back to the body again. Then it does a jig. And he says, yes, I have the body here. That's fine. And now you say, put it up on the roof. He hasn't told you it's doing anything, but if you'd asked him, you'd have found the moment it hit the roof, the body started making little paper airplanes and throwing them out into the street. This is automaticity. This is action outside the control of the individual. I suppose that really is the definition of automaticity. Desire to have action outside the control of self, even though one has initiated the action. Automaticity is a principle with which randomity is produced. But if automaticity comes up to such a point as to be uncontrollable, an individual finds himself extremely perplexed after a while, because he set up so many circuits he don't know who he is anymore. Well, he is the fellow that can make the automaticity increase and decrease in those images. Body lands out on the street and starts twirling an umbrella. You say, all right, what's the body doing out there? He says, well, just standing there twirling an umbrella and so forth. And you say, did you start it twirling the umbrella? He says, no. Well, make it twirl the umbrella faster. Now make it twirl it slower. Now make it twirl it much faster. And he'll say by this time, oh, it's put the umbrella away by now. And it's put on some skates and it's skating. Well, you better start in with the simplest geometric forms, if that sort of thing happens. Simplest geometric forms. Geometric form one, of course, is a point. Geometric form two is a small circle or a disc. Three is a square. Four is a triangle. Any one of these little figures, and have the fellow take that and put it up someplace or back someplace, under, around, and so forth, until he can hold it still. And until you can hold it still and then move it at will. Hold it still, move it at will. Hold it still, move it at will. All of a sudden he said, what do you know? I can control these gimmicks which I create. And he'll take a considerable jump up the tone scale at that moment. Now, another effect of automaticity is that the individual has a developed disability in order to have something done for him. Now, you're just looking right straight at the service facsimile chain there. It always has to go this way. He has to tell himself, all right, I can't do this, so he can do something else. In other words, he's tired of this setup, and instead of saying, well, the devil with it, or blowing it up or something like that, he wants it to continue in some fashion. So he says, well, I'm incapable of taking care of this segment of it, and therefore we'll set that up sort of on an automatic circuit. Anytime anything is done for one, there is an incapability demonstrated by the individual. Look at modern advertising. Save yourself 190 steps a minute. Use Squirrelo. Straight from our laboratories in Colorado Springs. An electric shock in every package. You know very well that you couldn't possibly be able to exist without a whompicator, a tumpipater, a little handy Jim Dandy can opener. You know you couldn't exist without these things. Well, you stop and look at it for a minute. You can exist without them. Yes, you say, well, I can, all right, I can do without a can opener. I can sort of bite them open with my teeth. What the hell are you doing with a tin can? You'll say, well, you have a tin can so you'll be able to eat. You say, what the dickens you doing eating? A fella says, well, you got to keep the body going. What are you doing with a body, fella? Well, yeah, you have a... well, I couldn't get along without a body. I tried it the other day, the state of clearing and stuff, and I didn't have enough force in order to push things around or do anything. I just didn't. You say, what are you doing without force, fella? And he says, why, I don't know. That's right, I don't know. How the dickens did he get into such a state that he can't produce a kilowatt? I mean, all you're asking the fellas to produce one lousy, stinking little kilowatt of energy and direct it. That's all you're asking of him. And can he do it? No. You say, well, all right, how about pulling the electric light line down there, and there's only 110 volts on it, and shorting it with a wire so it'll crackle and go spit. Oh, no. No, he didn't want anything to do with that. Why doesn't he want something to do with it? Well, automaticity, a long time ago, said it's better to have something else produce force for me than me to produce the force, because it's more fun that way. It's not more fun that way, but it's a better operational control that way for somebody else. I can just see somebody from Batten, Barton, Durstein, and Osborne now walking in to your home universe saying, now what you need is a little more automaticity. We've got a couple of boys, and they've drawn up this little operating schedule here, and all you have to do is just set up this little dynamo, and it makes all this force over on this side, and then you don't have to make the force anymore. It possibly never occurred to somebody, such as the wantingness of a Thetan, probably never occurred to him to say, now, wait a minute. Why do I want something to make force for me? I'm just getting along just fine. Probably never occurred to him that. He probably said, well, that's cute, that's interesting, that's all set. There's no difference between that theoretical and highly postulated operation. BBDO doesn't operate in the theta universes. There's a fellow by the name, I won't go on about that. They burn coal down there. Anyway, here we have one of the most marvelous operations. You look tired. Let me take your slippers, and you just sit there and read your paper. Oh, the work was hard today, was it? Automaticity in another guise, in another position on the tone scale. These people would go around and say to you, poor fellow, you look so tired. If you can't furnish a kilowatt, you'd better learn how, so that you can zap him. Because he's trying to kill you and cut down your horsepower. That's it. I mean, he isn't just doing this out of sheer stupidity or something of the sort. He isn't doing it out of automatic circuits, actually lurking right back that in the level of knowingness is how can we get this guy quieted down. You look so tired. You poor fellow, you are overworked. What you need is a rest. Tell a fellow that often enough, and he's all set. Now, you'll find every once in a while somebody does need a rest. Every once in a while somebody's worked himself to a sizzled frazzle, and he's all set. Let him go someplace and take a rest. He'll have to. Automaticity is mounted up on him to a point where the best and easiest way to combat it is to actually give him a rest. But that is long after the first germs are planted. Here's this fellow, let's take a young playwright. He's maybe 22, he's writing plays like mad. After he writes them, he goes around and he has a whale of a time and figuring it all out this way and that and getting the producer, and he's around the parties and he's doing this and he's doing that and squaring things around, and finally the production gets on and, geez, he's half the cast too. He's working day and night continually, and that play goes over and he gets another play and he's got that one and he's sitting up all night long writing that one. He's going out on a party and so forth and making contacts with people, and he's coming back in and he's making contacts with these business agents. He's work, and that telephone is ringing and he's writing with his left hand. He's just going like a rocket. How long could he grow like a rocket without blowing up? Well, nobody's ever given anybody a chance to find out. They don't blow up because they're working hard. and using energy. They do not do that. Let me emphasize that, because you want to know what to do for the tired businessman who is facing a nervous breakdown. It's contained right in this process. You'll find plenty of those. What happened? Well, he was 22, and he was 23, and he was 24, and he was just doing fine. And then all of a sudden, you find out that he slowed down. He had to protect himself. He thought he had to take care of himself and do a little bit better. Find the character who slowed him down, because he didn't slow himself down. Now, you could say, sure, he went through a failure, and he went this way, and he went that way, and there were lots of reasons for it. Oh, no, there weren't any reasons for it. A guy can ride over 40,000 failures and come up shining, put the machine guns on the parapet and go back to work, unless there's somebody there, some serpent in the Garden of Eden, who is ready to twine around his neck and choke him to death with his clawing statement, "Dear, you're working so hard, let's take a rest, shall we? What you need is a little vacation. Oh, you've just had a failure? Well, let's get away from it all now, and why don't you just forget it for a week or two and have a little rest, and it'll be all right, and you'll be able to come back fresh and shiny." Phooey. What do you do? Why do you locate this character? Why do you locate automaticity number one for current life? So that you can take this person and start handling this person with mock-ups very adequately, until the person of this person seems to be so easily handled that one does not afterwards have to do anything that person said. How do you bust out every engram Mama ever laid in? Work the preacher up with mock-ups until he can chuck Mama the length and breadth of the city. Use her for a football and roll her up into a hedgehog and fire from cannonballs. And then also be very nice to her and put capes and create things for her and put her in big palaces and blow them up so on. But you'll find out that somebody entered into his life, this young playwright's life, theoretically, who wanted to tell him just one thing. I want to eat you. And I can't do it right now because you're running too fast for me. But in view of the fact that we're very, very low tone scale, we can get you running slower. We'll be all right. Homo sapiens hardly has a chance. He's glued down to a gravity field, which is very heavy. And he can't get up to speed. The fastest acting fellow you ever knew is operating at maybe 1/100th or even 1/1000th of what would be considered a normal speed in space. It's real slow. I mean, Homo sapiens reminds you of the fellow, the diver walking in the bottom of the sea, slow motion against the water. It's just almost agony to look at him. You wonder, my God, he's walking down the street. You see some guy in one of these go-getters walking down the street, and evidently his feet are going chop, 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 chop. No, they're not. You say, after he's picked that foot up, is he ever going to set it down again? You know, you just watch this slow, agonizing. This fellow thinks he's walking. He thinks he's moving in some direction or other. And you watch him pick that foot up, or you watch the foot go through, and you hear the joints creak, and so forth, and it gets over to the midpoint of the stride. And then it goes down again, slowly, slowly, and about that time he shifts the weight of his body, and he gets the other foot starting to come up. And you think, oh, Christ, how's anybody ever going to get that way? It's like all the pavements are made out of glue. Automaticity got to them. They're running slow. And it is a speed level which is very dangerous. The fastest that Homo sapiens moves is a speed level below the point of high danger. You just can't move that slow and live. And Homo sapiens doesn't live. 70. That's like a snap of your fingers and the length of eternity. It's not even that. Let's see, I guess it'd be an infinitesimally small instant, are an infinitesimally small part of the length of time necessary to snap one's fingers. Yes. All right. Automaticity. How do you recognize it? What do you do about it? And how does it apply to processing? Homo sapiens, you're pre-clear. He's running slow. A lot of people say, well, all right, I'm out of body. I stay out there stably. What do I do now? Well, it's something like taking a quarter horse out there, and you finally got this quarter horse so that he can lounge over to the other side of the stall and say, now we have fully rehabilitated this quarter horse, let's go and find something else to do. Yeah, he can cross his legs and lounge over against the other side of the stall, so you think he's fully fast enough and active enough to be a quarter horse. When you get him up to the highest point that you possibly think that anybody could get up to in terms of speed, thought, ability to move, reaction time, and ability to create energy, realize that you are just about at that point looking at the lowest, safest level he could be at if nothing else ever happened to him, to shake him up. You're scraping bottom then. Now let's get him up to speed from there. Just take the uttermost super limit that you can think of in terms of speed and action and consider that as below what is a safe margin, operating margin. And the way you handle this is to knock out all the automaticity. It seems to be, Tullio, that if you could get your pre-clear to do everything automatically, he would then and there be in the first best possible method of training. He would be trained. This goes to such an idiocy that they actually, mind you, the planet Earth, where they train athletes. They get fellows out there and they get them pushing things around with their shoulders to play football, and they get them trotting around tracks in short pants, and if they smoke a cigarette. No. That's a lot of hogwash. It was brought in here from Sweden, a new method of slowing people down. What do you build up with all of those things? You build up this very glorious lot of new facsimiles which pass for muscles. If you ever want to see the ultimate in training, just take a look at one of these boys that has built up all these muscles with barbells. He's really wonderful. He hasn't got any sphere or motion action, anything else, the kind that he ought to have. Why? He's done nothing but build up facsimiles in the exact spots that he ought to build the facsimiles up in. And people have never coordinated this. Why is it when a fella trains up on barbells, he gets unhealthier and unhealthier? He looks muscleder, but he is actually getting less and less able to withstand bacteria or anything else. You go out here one of these football squads sometime if you really want to laugh. By my God, you'd think you were walking down the ward of a hospital. These guys are just, they get more and more delicate. The coach practically goes around and starts feeding them sugar. And one of the first things he'd do if you started auditing some of these boys is he'd come in with terrific anxiety. Don't break up my quarterback now. Don't sneeze in here. Don't do anything else because he's liable to sprain his back or something. You look at them as they go out onto the playing field, and they're all taped up and wrapped up and strapped up and splinted up until they put this uniform on them after that. And the reason they wear uniforms and so forth is to cover up the bandages. Because all this fella had to do was open his car door, and he practically broke his arm. It's wonderful. They get them up to a real high level of automaticity. All right, how do you cure that? You just handle mock-ups until the fellow can really handle a mock-up. He knows what the mock-up is doing. He can place it where he wants to place it, and he doesn't wait for somebody else to place it there for him. Now, there is a level of automaticity where you can get further with your pre-clear if you have him mock up somebody in order to move something around. You can actually go at it that way if you have to. You mock up a fellow by the name of Jonesweiler or something, or Bessie Ann, to go over and push the mock-up around. And he'll get tired of this after a while, and all of a sudden he'll come to this astonishing realization. He'll say, you know, I don't need Bessie Ann. And you'll say, no. What we're working with here is a level of self-sufficiency, which is really a little bit out of the imagination of man. He's built up things to such an interdependency, and he thinks this interdependency is so vital that the fellow who can stand up on his own 2 feet is looked at like a freak. What? You mean this fellow doesn't buy General Foods products? He doesn't have to have 18 hot and cold running bellhops every time he goes into a hotel. He carries his own baggage. He says to the devil, what the devil's the maid keep coming in here for? The bed's already made. I'm got up. They come in. They, what's the matter with you? I mean, they kind of look at you. They say, well, he made his own bed. That's bad, you understand? That's real bad. Now, out in China, they have an organization that'll set up all through the longshore societies of China, which are fascinating to behold. And that is Pao Chia. Don't break your neighbor's rice bowl. And I was a little, when I was a kid out there, I used to look at this and I'd say, oh, no. Things just can't be this bad. Don't break your neighbor's rice bowl. All right. Well, how do they go about this? All right. You're a shipper, you see, and you order a ton of freight to be laid down on the Jingo jetty. And you're supposed to have this ton of freight laid down on this jetty. And it's just down the river, and you've got another ship there, and it's going to pick that ton of freight up at that jetty. Well, everything's all going to go up very smoothly, except Pao Chia is going to step in your road. And that consists of this. The boys who bring the freight down to the Jingo jetty don't bring it to Jingo jetty. They haven't any vested interest in this at all, except they know there's another longshore crew upriver that isn't working, and they have to have work to eat. They know that. They know it so thoroughly that they're spinning out the bottom as a civilization so darn fast they look like a rocket pointed straight down. They take that ton of freight they're supposed to be hauling for you, and they put it up the river a mile, and then they walk off. Boy, big mistake. Big mistake. They couldn't possibly have done this, and they remedy the whole thing, but they can't move anything on the river. They know a fellow, though. They know this fellow, and this fellow, he can get it moved for him. The next thing you know, you have to hire another longshore crew in order to take that ton of freight and take it back down the river a mile to Jingo Jetty. And perhaps if you were standing there with the coppers in your hands or something of the sort and saying you just won't pay a dime unless it's laid down on the Jingo jetty, the package, the ton of freight, will be delivered a mile south of the Jingo jetty. And actually they will take something like that and they will shift it up the river and down the river and into this sampan and into the wrong boat and over on the wrong side. You watch your boys unloading a ship of rice, let's say. The guys, your own crew, will start picking up rice bags, and they'll start over the side with a rice bag, and they will go down to the bottom of the gangway. You hear a whole lot of urchins and beggars and people down along the docks, and they'll just take and bust a small hole in that rice bag. As they reach the bottom of the gangway, bust a whole small hole in the rice bag and pack it across into the warehouse. And, of course, it's leaving a track of rice all the way along behind them, a little tiny, thin trickle of rice. And they'll stack up that sack, and they go back, and they'll get the next sack. And the little kids suddenly burst out of nowhere and so on, and they've got dustpans, little brooms, something like that, and they'll sweep up this rice. Don't break your neighbor's rice bowl. Never occurs to any of them, you say, oh, look, I don't want all those rice sacks broken. We'll just take 2 rice sacks and sit it over there, and all the beggars can have that. Oh, no. You see, the theory is they have to make work for somebody. They have to make work. And they run it in exact opposites to, they won't let anybody work that possibly can be restrained from working. Just walk down off a ship, or walk out of a hotel, or just try and reach down for your hat which you dropped, or God, some of the boys out, the fellow who get to be old China hands and so forth, they just go to pieces. These fellows will sit down in a chair, and actually some of them will go to the extent of separating the thumb and fingers wide enough for a glass to be put in it. None of them have their wrists lifted to their mouths, but it's just about that bad. They are surrounded by service, lots of service, big stuff. Well, you say immediately, why? How could we possibly do without a lot of this service? And again, we go down, am I expected to bite the tin can open with my teeth? What are you doing with a tin can? If you're going to support a lot of objects which aren't yours anyhow, you can get into a dwindling spiral on this. You wonder why the rich and rich families last about three generations in America at the absolute outside. The great fortunes of America go on that roller coaster on an average with great regularity. That's because of service. They have, and then people make sure that they have. And people make real sure they have. And then one day, the third generation is so dead that it couldn't be moved around with a derrick. Automaticity. Well, way up the level, we get an automaticity. We get allowable automaticity, which we could say is allowable automaticity. We say this operation is going to continue. And you saying at the same time, I am continuing this operation. Next allowable automaticity is we are a group of individuals and we have a subdivided set of functions here. And in order to smooth this out, we will stay by our own functions, divided functions. Not because that is efficient, and not because a specialist should stick to his last, the whole field of medicine. The only reason medicine finally blew up back there in the 20th century was actually because of specialization. Somebody went in and if there was a spot on the center of the tonsil and they'd just gone to a tonsil expert, why, they had to go to a center of a tonsil expert to have the spot examined. That thing set in, and specialization. But here it's a very allowable thing to set up spheres of action. Not on the phony excuse that there are people there who are specialized and strangely skilled in these actions. Not on that theory at all, but just on the theory that we want to produce some randomity. You're setting it up on the theory that each person there is segregated into a sphere of action. Not to have things smoother or anything. Who wants things smooth? It's just to produce greater randomity. And it becomes unallowable the moment when we say the reason we have done this is these people are particularly skilled in these lines that could not handle the other functions. And they've said, we couldn't handle the other functions we've introduced to disability, and we've said, therefore, the group has to be served. Automaticity, the group has to be served. Hogwash. There's no reason to go downscale to pick up these excuses. What are you doing it for? It's fun, that's all. There isn't any heavy pressure of necessity on this line. All right. Now, You have in that same strata the communication of knowledge. You start in at some low strata like Earth or something like this. Somebody might have a little more experience along in these various lines. You're trying to dig out of something, get back through. An automaticity setup or a functional setup which heightens self-determinism is not only allowable but desirable. Because you can heighten it at a greater speed. But an automaticity which is entered in to depress self-determinism or demonstrate a disability becomes highly aberrative and will wind up with its dwindling spiral into something like the messed universe. So, when you look this picture over, you'll find out that studying spheres of knowledge quite allowable, as long as those spheres are then not used as control factors on the rest of the group. Get that one. Just as long as they're not then used as control factors on the rest of the group. That big, long knife, which you see gleaming slightly behind my back, is one which I'm going to sink straight through the whole cult of the reason I am important is because I am an authority. And I can stay important, this group says, just as long as I can convince you that it is difficult and succeed in withholding some of the information from you. That's a control operation. Knowledge in that sphere then is saying, you'll get the vectors on this in a moment very clear. The person who does that is saying, we must have automaticity. I am sitting here and I am the only one who knows, and therefore, being the only one who knows possibly, why I have to hold back information and use part of what I've got to reduce the automaticity, to heighten automaticity and reduce the self-determinism of others in this group. Now, that operation winds up in disaster. Fortunately, it winds up in disaster for all hands, including the authority. And then there is allowable levels all up and down the line. It is true that Homo sapiens has an interdependency which must be served so long as he continues to be Homo sapiens, and that he is just as capable of digging himself out as Homo sapiens as he can buy a breathing space from the terrific, onerous necessity levels which have been thrust upon him throughout time. I mean by that, we wouldn't have a ghost of a chance of digging ourselves out right now unless Homo sapiens actually had slugged up from the mud far enough to a point where he had a little leisure time. If every one of you was forced to handle with your bare hands the blocks and so forth of buildings, if you were able only to secure manuscripts which had been printed arduously, word by word, stroke by stroke, no, you wouldn't have much of a chance. For the good reason that the oppression of the individual would have become tremendous just in the level of survival. We happen to be going through temporarily, momentarily, only for an instant, a period when man has made himself relatively free by the use of a machine. A period which just succeeds after a period when he was terribly enslaved by a machine. The early days of industrialism with their 12, 14-hour days, with their smoke-belching factories that were eating out the lungs and wits of everybody in them. That was a pretty grim period. He had moved from one kind of slavery to another kind of slavery. All right, he's moved out of that. This era is just succeeding that. And just before the machine is employed for his utter enslavement. The reason you've got Scientology is to a large degree because it's right here that there's a breathing period on Earth. It's a little breathing period. I don't know how many years it is from here to the other, but you've already seen it begin. You've already seen the second slavery stage start, and it started with Hiroshima. It became dangerous, according to the most learned of our national political buffoons for knowledge to be disseminated. Of course, every country that could possibly afford to build one now has an atom bomb. So I don't know quite where they got off that their atomic police was so important. But it became terribly important to them to shut all the boundaries on knowledge. And you've seen those things, those curtains shutting down. And those are the shades of night falling. When they say, Professor Wumfgutta is no longer at the university. He is working at our project at a destination point unknown, and you have to have cards, and you have to have this, and your political affiliations are wrong, so therefore your theories of nuclear fission are wrong. The whole nonsense of thought police is moving right straight in the shades of night. Now, we've got a period here of a very short space of time. You see, it isn't the destruction of civilization by an atomic bomb that worries anybody. These jokers can't throw enough atomic bombs to blow this civilization up. They just haven't got enough bombs, that's all. Man is the most surprising character. I tell you, you could lie in off of a beach and you could hear the 16-inch shells going in over your heads like so many freight trains, moving in with tremendous explosions in the sand and in different barricades over on a shoreline. And you'd hear your own gun going and everybody else's guns going and the bombs coming down like hail. And you'd say there couldn't be anybody left alive in there. That's utterly impossible for a single human being to have survived in the midst of that flame and rubble. Uh-oh. Your first landing craft hit that beach. All of that masonry and everything else would vomit humanity and fire coming your way. It's the most fantastic thing. It just exceeds your ability to figure out why this exists, that man is so relatively unkillable. I have seen him live through continually things he couldn't possibly have lived through. So don't worry about the atomic bomb from the standpoint of wiping out all human beings. No, it's something else. It's let's shut down the communication lines of knowledge. Here, for a brief moment, we have had them free and open, and something could happen now because we have a big weapon. Let's close all the frontiers. There's a tremendous urgency against that, because that's real. That's going to happen here on Earth. There's really only one other answer to it, an answer you don't want anything to do with. And that is to start in using your weapons as a police weapon to get it across. That becomes very rough. Start using Scientology as a police weapon in order to free people. Very bad. Very complicated. Not very doable. Now, automaticity then tells you that bad automaticity would be that which depressed self-determinism by pretending sympathy or service for others, and good automaticity would only be that which raised the self-determinism of others and let them more and more on a rising scale think, act, and provide for themselves. Automaticity on all these lines and all these points. But, dear, I have to do it for you because you are so tired, is down. Very definitely. You want these automaticity people, bad automaticity people, out of your pre-clear's life, and you get them out by handling them with mock-ups on the part of the pre-clear. Let's take a break.